Welcome to Youth Speaks Out, a show by, for, and about young people. It airs on the last Sunday of each month from 2 to 3 p.m. and is hosted by young people in Mendocino County. We want to create a place where young people can talk truthfully about important issues in our lives and have a dialogue with the community of listeners. Today's hosts are me, Brianna, and
Jenny.
We both attend Laytonville High School. Today our topic is mock elections, the high school version. Starting tomorrow, Laytonville High School will participate in a mock election called My Vote, created by the California Secretary Deborah Bowen. Students will campaign and vote for the presidential primary mock ballot measures. This program is available to all schools in California. In Mendocino County, Laytonville High, Leggett Valley High, and the Willits Charter School are taking part. The ballots will be counted by each school, and statewide totals will be published. The purpose of this exercise is to offer high school students a chance to learn about the candidates and issues, and gain firsthand lessons on the power of voting, and how government and politics affect every part of their lives. As the Secretary of State says, young people have the potential to be a force in elections, but only if they get involved and make voting a habit. The student government of each school work with teachers and principals to educate the student body in the electoral process. Both Jenny and I will be going to classes tomorrow representing presidential candidates. In a few moments, we'll present our campaign speeches. As well as voting for the presidential candidates, students will vote on three mock ballot measures. The first, ballot measure number one, is should the registration fee that every car or truck owner is required to pay each year be based in part on the amount of pollution the vehicle emits? Ballot measure number two is, should every eligible citizen be required to vote? And ballot number three says, should people who use email, instant messaging, text messaging, and the social networks to bully or harass others be allowed to do so as part of their constitutionally protected right to free speech? The results from the three mock ballot measures should be of interest to students and adult voters as well. The actual ballot measures before California voters are about transportation funds, community college funding, limits on legislators' terms of office, and the four amendments to the Indian Gaming Compacts. When we open the phone lines in about 20 minutes, we would really appreciate your insight into the actual ballot measures. Since I have turned 18, I will be voting for the first time this election. I am optimistic about the process, but I wonder why hundreds of millions of dollars are spent on primary campaigns. Does the money being poured into advertising help me better understand the candidates and measures, or am I being persuaded like I am in fast food commercials? Are morals and ethics the core of the discussions, or economics and personal identification the basis of how I choose to vote? Are propositions intentionally too complicated so that I won't really understand the implications of my vote? Why are dirty tricks used in every campaign? Are voters really choosing, or is it all to make us feel as if we have a stake in the political culture? Maybe you can help me see why voting is so important. I know that being involved with the mock elections has helped me get a grasp on how the electoral process works. Now Jenny will present the candidate, as she will in the classroom tomorrow.
So, the candidate I was given was John McCain. I didn't know much about John McCain, actually, until I started researching more about him. He has three generations of military service, and he also won a Purple Heart while serving in Vietnam, where he was severely wounded, along with many other distinguished military awards. Both his father and grandfather were U.S. Navy admirals, so he has quite a history of serving this country. And we'll see how that goes.
We hope that you are interested in these subjects and will want to participate in this radio program. We're at the Willits Studio, and our phone number will be 456-9991. We will encourage everyone to join in the discussion in about 15 minutes. Let's begin by talking about what we have learned by being involved in the My Vote mock primary elections. Jenny, what stands out in your mind?
Well, what really stands out in my mind about this mock election is that we now actually get a chance to vote and to really express our opinions in this election. Youth are, in many ways, underrepresented, and so this is a really big chance for us to express our own opinions. And it gives society the picture of what our thoughts are and how we feel on issues. because this upcoming election will affect us as well as adults. And like you said, Brianna, this will give youth a better grasp on what is going on. This is a great opportunity, and I only wish that more of the schools in California and the nation would participate, because after all, we are the future, and our opinions determine the future as well.
Yeah, I really agree that youth are very underrepresented. I mean, we were talking about it earlier, and we can't vote. We have no representation. You know, it's this supposed idea that, oh, we're represented by our parents. But I think it's pretty obvious to see that that's not true. I mean, what's that saying is that pretty much we are forced to have the same views as our parents because that's who we're being represented by. And I don't think that's fair. I mean, if any other group in society was treated the way youth were treated, there'd be a rebellion. They, you know, it's like if you treated women the way that youth are treated and said, you know, you have no representation, look what happened. You know, there was, and there was an amendment, you know, so that women could vote.
Yeah, and like, even though our parents don't realize it, they're subconsciously influencing us too. And, you know, we don't really get our say until we're over 18 and 21. And so that's a big part.
Yeah, I mean, I think part of the reason youth maybe don't vote is because we sit here for, you know, 18 years and we just take it and we just deal with what society gives us. And then you turn 18 and it's like, oh, well, now they care what I have to say. You know, if you think about it, like, if your birthday's on February 6th, you don't get to vote in the primaries because it's one day, but then the next day they care about your opinions. And so it's like you spent 18 years where no one cares and no one expects you to care and you don't matter. And then all of a sudden they're like, okay, now we want you to care. And it's kind of like, well, you're 18 years too late. What, do you just start having opinions the day you turn 18?
Yeah, and this mock election is really going to help us too, because it's going to prepare us. And so when we turn 18, and we'll have a better grasp on like what to do for the primary election and how it's going to affect us later on.
Yeah, I thought it was cool, like, reading the different ballot measures. And there are things that, you know, do kind of are starting to pertain to the world or, you know, our country today. Like, looking at, you know, should everyone that's eligible to vote be required to? Or, you know, the one on pollution. And so, I mean, how do you feel about those different ballot measures?
Well, I think that the one where you're required to vote, if you were required to vote, there's lots of people who just don't understand, what's it, like, what it's about, and so they're uneducated about it, and so their opinions would probably be just the opinions of people who influence them, and so it wouldn't really be their opinion, and so, I don't think that's really fair for our country, because there would be so much influence, and so people wouldn't really be expressing what they could say, and it'd just be all an influence.
I mean, I don't want to sound like a intellectual snob or, you know, like the, you know, only the white rich man should vote, but at a certain point I have to agree with, like, our four founding fathers, you know, they were worried about letting people have too much control over the government because people are so uncontrollable, you know, like, they swing, and they don't necessarily always look into issues. So, you know, you come out, and you, you know, say, so-and-so, like what just happened with Obama, you know, Obama did cocaine when he was younger, and, you know, people are just gonna not vote for him, or, you know, not saying that people didn't, but, you know, dirty tricks like that are more effective because people don't look into them and people don't research them.
Yeah, and young people have their own reasons for not participating, you know, in the political process. When surveyed, 64% of young people agreed with the statement that government is run by a few big interests looking out for themselves, not for the benefit of all, while only 31% of surveyed college students said that all or most members of Congress are honest and trustworthy.
I just don't think people are trustworthy, and maybe that goes into that, you know, the only people that are elected president have spent, like, look how much money has been spent, millions of dollars have been spent hundreds of millions of dollars has been spent into just the primary so far. And it's like, okay, well, sometimes I feel like I did vote this year, but why vote? Because those people don't understand me. They don't understand the struggles that I go through every day. They're not one of us. You know, they don't have the problems that we have. And so it's kind of hard to vote for someone that you don't feel like they understand you.
Yeah, and it's just this big competition for who has more money, and who has more money is going to win because they have more advertisements and they're better known. And so it's not very fair.
Well, and it's like if, you know, big business has just given you, you know, a couple $100,000 or $1 million, you know, they say, oh, that's not persuasion. That's persuasion right there. You know, no one's going to then turn around when they're then have then been elected president and, you know, make choices that are going to hurt the people that finance their campaigns. They're just not going to do that because people then won't finance their campaigns in the future.
Yeah. So what about changing the driver's license or the driving age to 18?
Well, I don't know. I think that's just another way of, like, taking away the little freedom that our youth have. And, I mean, I was talking to somebody when the mock election ballots came out, and I was talking to some of the kids at the high school. And, like, what they said, especially looking at Laneville, where we're living in a very rural area, some of these kids don't have the greatest homes, and they don't have the greatest parents. And so when they at least turn 16, they can get a job, and they can drive themselves to work, and they can start to be self-reliant. And so we take that away from them, and they don't even have that. And we're kind of just saying, if you have bad parents, or if you have a difficult situation, you're stuck with it, and we're going to make it practically impossible for you to get out and for you to do well for yourself.
Yeah, and I think you said this before, too. Like, once you're 18, you go to college, but if we change it to the driver age to 18, it'd just be no step between getting your driver license and then going out of the house, and so it wouldn't really prepare you. And then once you turn 21, you get, you know, drinking age, but then 18 to 21 is just 2-3 years, and so it just wouldn't prepare you for the world.
Right, I mean, at least if you get your driver's license at age 16, if your parents catch you, you know, hot-rodding around or doing something you're not supposed to, they can take your vehicle away. But when you turn 18, they have no control over that. And so, you know, although there are a lot of parents that aren't supervising their kids when they're driving, there are some that do. And so it's just kind of, I think it's just adding a bigger problem to what already is a problem right now.
Yeah.
What do you think about ballot measure 1? It says, should the registration fee that every car or truck owner is required to pay each year be based in part on the amount of pollution the vehicle emits?
Well, one thing that struck out in my mind was that people, like, the wealthy people, they have hybrids, and so they don't need to worry about car emission, and so they don't need to pay that extra money, which means that they just get wealthier and wealthier, while, you know, regular people who don't have the money to buy hybrids, or they just have to pay for the car emission, and so they wouldn't, you know, it wouldn't help them at all, and they're the people that need the help.
Yeah. When I first read it, I was way excited. I was like, finally, we're gonna hold people responsible. But I kind of feel like all these rules on emissions and this, that, and the other thing, they're putting the Band-Aid on a wound that needs stitches. It's like, the problem's somewhat people, but the biggest problem is in Detroit. The biggest problem is that these car companies have this monopoly, and they could create more fuel-efficient vehicles, they could create electric cars, they could solve the problem, but that's not going to make them as much money. Because if you look at, like, when they sell a vehicle, the money doesn't stop there. The money continues because you have to have that car serviced and you have to buy gas for that car. And it's this whole repeating cycle. And that's why they shot down the electric car, was because you were taking away their repeating cycle.
Yeah. And the California State Legislature considered Assembly Bill 493 in 2007, which would have have required people buying vehicles that didn't meet certain fuel efficiency standards to pay a surcharge of up to $2,500. The money would have been used to reward buyers of more fuel-efficient models with rebates up to $2,500. The bill failed in the assembly.
I don't know if, like, you should give people money who choose to buy more fuel-efficient vehicles. I mean, if we want to fix fuel, if we want to fix the problem with global warming, the first thing we need to do is, you know, get rid of the monopoly in the vehicle, like the car industry, get rid of the monopoly in the oil industry. That's where the biggest problems are. But if, you know, I realize that's going to be a very difficult task right now. But if we do want to do something like Measure 1, I think the most effective thing is that you're not giving people rebates or, you know, cash value for buying fuel-efficient vehicles. You can, you know, on new vehicles, maybe if people want to buy the giant Hummer that gets, you know, 8 miles per gallon, then they are charged more. But I also think we need to take into account the people that, you know, I'm a country girl, and I know people that they own a ranch. They can't buy a hybrid. They can't work their ranch with a hybrid. They can't haul their horses or their cows. They have to buy trucks. It's not that they wouldn't like a more fuel-efficient vehicle, but it's just not feasible for them.
Yeah, and it hurt them more in the end, too, just because they wouldn't be able to, you know, they can't afford to lose that, and so it just would hurt them terribly to the point where they just lose their job, and so it wouldn't benefit them at all.
I guess I'm just leery of anything that's just going to continue the cycle of the rich becoming richer and the poor becoming poorer. Because that just seems like that's what's going on in America today.
Yeah, and so should people who use email, instant messaging, text messaging, and the social networks to bully or harass others be allowed to do so as part of their constitutionally protected right to free speech?
I don't know. I mean, it's kind of a hard one to decide. I mean, like, recently in the news, there's been stories of people who have been harassed over email or over instant messaging and have actually committed suicide because of it, mainly, like, teenagers. And I don't think it's right. I think people need to be held accountable for their actions. But then again, it's hard for me to understand, like, why you would choose to commit suicide because somebody sent you a mean email.
Yeah, and I know those emails can be blocked, too. You don't need to look at them. You have a choice to look at them or not look at them. And so, yeah, in a way, you know, they're really in control of what's going to happen to them more than other people are.
Although, you know, at a certain point, harassment is harassment. And, I mean, that's not right, and that's not okay. And so, I guess it depends, you know, just school is mean. Kids are mean. And so if we can protect our youth, should we? You know, is it worth chilling people's free speech to protect our youth? And I think that's the ultimate question that lies there.
Yeah, and many adults consider school bullying part of the typical social atmosphere in schools, too. In movies and television shows, school bullying is often portrayed as a rite of passage, with no mention to the lasting damage it can cause. It's so ingrained in our culture as part of the childhood experience that a few have ever imagined it would turn into a disturbing trend of violence and disregard for fellow students' emotional and physical well-being and, you know, how it affects them as a whole.
I know. I don't think people know, like, the lasting effects. If you look at, you know, the Columbine shooters or, you know, different, there is a huge growing trend in society for our youth to be more and more violent. And if we don't stop it, we're just going to continue to have problems like Columbine.
Yeah, and it's just in movies and in music, it's just hate related. And so it just influences minors who are kind of rebellious into believing that. And so our, you know, media isn't helping it at all.
I just feel like part of the problem is that students are very much ignored. You know, the whole idea that large of a percentage of adults think that it's just a rite of passage. And, you know, adults really aren't in touch with what's going on in high school and what's actually happening in high school.
Yeah, I read in a magazine a couple days that only 20% of students over 17 years of age still eat dinner with their parents. And so that's really, you know, hard to believe because, you know, that's a lot of time, you know, spent away from your family or just, you know, not interacting with your family. And so that contributes to, you know, lots of the signs. And
yeah, I mean, life's becoming busier. People are spending less time together. Parents are less aware of what's going on in their kids' lives. And so, you know, it just leads to the problem of I don't think youth feel like they are truly understood. And I think that's why, you know, if you look back at our primaries right now, that's why Obama is getting the votes he's getting from our youth, is that they finally feel like somebody understands them and somebody's being, you know, representing them almost, you know, the way that the younger voters felt when Kennedy was elected, is that finally somebody gets us. Mm-hmm. And that's a really good feeling, especially, you know, when I think about the fact that I've spent 18 years not being represented, and 18 years where no one has cared what I thought. And so it's like, finally, somebody's listening to me. And even if, you know, he's still, you know, not one of us, is the way I feel. Like, still, none of the candidates are one of us, but, like, somebody's listening to you. And so people, that excites people, you know. And I think that's why, you know, Bill Clinton was elected, was because people finally felt like, oh, there's somebody being elected to office that's one of us. There's somebody, you know, whether you agreed with Bill Clinton or not, I think that is why he was elected, is because people felt like they could relate to him.
Yeah, and, like, he was just, like, a couple weeks to a month ago, you know, he was down in Eureka, which is, you know, considerably small for lots of the other cities. And so, you know, we feel like he's closer to us, like Brianna said, you know, when he comes down to these small cities to help us as well.
How do you think society could make campaigns better?
Oh, that's hard. Well, by having a limit to how much they can spend on campaigning would probably help, because right now it's like this fight for who has the, you know, the highest amount of money, and who's going to, you know, whoever has the highest amount of money seems that they, you know, they're going to win because they have the money to advertise longer and better. And so it really, you know, money plays this large part in elections.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, if you look in European nations, most of the European nations, you have, like, people who are running can campaign for, like, 3 months before the election. As opposed to, like, if you look right now, people started this summer. So by the time you finally vote, you know, in the normal election for president, you've been hearing people's opinions for 18 months. And the thing that's hard for me with, like, all the candidates is it's really hard to finally figure out where they actually stand on an issue, because none of them will really take a side. None of them will say, you know, this is how I feel about this or that, because they don't want to turn off voters. And so, like, when I was going on different people's websites a couple weeks ago, you know, researching who I was going to vote for, it was really difficult to finally figure out, okay, well, so where do you stand on this issue? You know, and a lot of them didn't have a stance. It's, you know, or they have a stance that, you know, illegal immigration is wrong, but they don't know how to fix it. Mm-hmm. You know, I think we need, you know, a healthcare reform, but they don't propose an idea of how to reform healthcare. So it just kind of leaves you open-ended.
Yeah, and, you know, at this rate, people will be, you know, campaigning a year in advance or 2 years in advance for something that's not going to happen, you know, for another couple years. So the three-month limit, it sounds like a good idea.
Yeah, I think the other way, like, I don't know how you would do this, but part of what's hard with voting, and I think part of why people don't want to vote, is because people who are running for office can say whatever they want to. They can make you whatever promise they want to, and they're never held responsible for it. You know, they can, so you end up voting for someone and you think these amazing things are going to happen, and it comes down to it and nothing happens, and it's just a little bit depressing.
Yeah. And so what do you think about, you know, slogans and, you know, are voters really choosing, or is it to make people feel like they have a stake in it all?
Well, I mean, I think it's kind of a cynical view, and maybe it's true. I'd like to think that you really can, especially on the local level, you really do have an effect on society. On the national level, I know, like, sometimes I feel like, wow, you know, does it really matter if I vote? I'm one vote out of, you know, how many people? They'll all vote. But I think it's more of, like, the principle of the fact that if you want to sit and you want to critique society and you want to complain, and that's your right, but if you're not voting, then, you know, it's almost like you don't have a right to complain because everyone else is at least trying still, and you've given up.
Yeah, and, you know, that's maybe why the younger generation has stopped. You know, there's a decrease in voting. It's because they feel that their vote doesn't really count and that they're not being heard. And so, you know, but in reality, it does mean a lot when people vote.
Well, and you, as a kid, you express your opinions and what you hear a lot of the time, not to totally bag on adults, but what you hear a lot of the time is, oh, well, you just think that because you're a naive child and la, 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 and kids still think they can change their world. They haven't met reality yet. And, you know, you get the back when I was a kid kind of a thing. And so, you know, it's hard to want to be active when people aren't encouraging you to be active. Like, they just make you feel stupid for your ideas.
Yeah, and maybe you're even intimidated to vote because you feel, you know, you kind of start to believe them that, you know, you are ignorant and you don't know how to vote, and so it really affects the country as a whole.
We're going to open the phone lines now. The phone number is 456-9991. Everyone is welcome to call, and we'd especially like to encourage the youth, their parents, and concerned friends in the listening audience. Please call in if you have questions or insights about mock elections at the schools. Do you think this is a good use of classroom time? If you have been voting for a while, how did you learn about the process? Would mock elections have helped you? Do you vote the same way that your parents voted? Should there be limits on how much candidates can spend on running for an office? Do you feel like campaigns are trying to fool you into voting? Are they really informing you about the character of the candidate? Are moral or economic platforms more important? Are propositions intentionally too complex so that people won't really understand what they mean? How do you decide who to vote for, and which propositions are good? How could we, the people, improve the democratic process? Should we be able to vote none of the above? The phone line is 456-9991. When you call, please be ready to turn down your radio, or we'll get a very confusing echo. Once again, the phone number is 456-9991. Please call and be a part of the discussion. We'd really like to hear from you. I think it was, you know, it's interesting to think about the argument against kids voting is that, oh, they're just going to vote however their parents did.
Yeah. And, you know, in a way we are, you know, influenced by our parents so much. You know, on a subconscious level, even the way they talk and, you know, even though they don't know that that's happening, you know, it happens. And so we're just influenced to the way our parents think.
I mean, when you think about it, the way you are raised does determine a lot of what party you choose to go with. Not, I'm actually very anti, like, choosing a political party because of that, is that people just vote with their party.
Yeah.
Caller, you're on the air.
Let me turn down my radio. Hello, I'm a man, 65, and I have a few comments, and one is the idea of being part of a democracy is not just whether we vote or not vote. I think sometimes we're lulled into complacency by this idea of a representative democracy. I think what we need to do is not only vote, I think that's, and be informed as voters, but also do things locally, form networks of volunteers, and also solve some of our problems that have apparent solutions. One of the things you were talking about was driver's licenses and things like that. I'm not sure that more emphasis should not be placed upon public transportation and rideshare programs where, when cars go down the road, that if there's an available passenger seat, that there should be ways of picking up locally and in a safe way people that need rides, and a certain common courtesy among those people that accept those rides, not to violate certain basic human principles. But what I think about third world countries, and just about every, in Guatemala anyway, every remote mountain village has a bus going to it two or three, four times a day with a large cargo rack on the top to transport goods and people and chickens and what have you. And, you know, I think we need to be more careful about our resources. And I think democracy is not only the vote, but get out all of us, not just youth, but of all ages, get out there and try to solve some of our local problems. There was an energy working group that was working so hard in trying to think of ways of being more practical in the use of our energy, but the powers that be simply glide over their thoughts and their recommendations and just do it as they want. So I really think the power should not be so central, but it should be more in the hands of the people. Youth has a special quality in as much as they have enormous amounts of energy, and when they're focused on something, what they accomplish is just incredible. And, you know, I think when we don't have things to direct our energy and excite us with passion, we do things that are not particularly savory. I was an inner city kid in New York, and I was all kinds of a bad boy. I was raised by a single mom, and she couldn't really watch me that well. But when I found structure, I'm not an advocate necessarily for the Boy Scouts, but that's the organization that gave me structure and gave me a purpose of trying to be part and contribute to society, not only in my ideas, but in my organizational capacities and my energy. Anyway, thanks for your program.
Thank you, caller.
I think that is a good point, is that it's not just about voting. It's about, you know, getting out there and expressing your ideas and making a stand. Even if you're not voting, you can still affect things by, you know, voicing your opinions and trying to do things. Once again, I'm Brianna.
And I'm Jenny.
And the phone number is 456-9991. Caller, you're on the air.
Hi, this is Dorothea Dorman calling. I just wanted to suggest that you speak up about the lack of discussion of should the young people go to Iraq and participate in an illegal and immoral war. And also recruiting, where should the recruiting be permitted on the high school campuses? What about the lying that goes on from the recruiters? They make huge promises to these young people. And there's another issue in that we have no, we have very poor funding for students to go on to higher education or even vocational education. And yet the recruiters are promising young people who are willing to go to Iraq something like $30,000 of perks and benefits. And an interesting study was just done recently, I think it was on Democracy Now, on Amy Goodman's show, showing that the great percentage of young people who are willing to go to Iraq are coming from the lowest test scores on their high school testing. So that we're giving more money to the poorest students if they're willing to go to Iraq and participate in that murder and that murderous operation over there than we are to our good students who might come from poor families who would like to go on to school and simply can't afford it. So I'd like to hear your take on that. And how come some form of this issue isn't on your mock ballot.
Well, caller, how would you change the election process to accomplish your goals?
What, your mock ballot for the school?
No, how would you change the entire election process, like for the nation, to accomplish your goals?
I couldn't have that question. It has come from, I think the man who called in before says, that, you know, you start at the local level to make change. At the national level, it's very difficult. We've really got a huge mess, and my own opinion is that the economic blowdown, which I think that we will eventually lose the economy. I think the economy will go broke because the one big thing the U.S. manufactures is weapons. That's our biggest product now. We don't make anything here anymore. So I think we're going to, that the economy going bust will give us the conditions that we need to make the change, and hopefully there won't be too much suffering, though it's always the poor who suffer the most in something like this.
Thank you, caller.
You're welcome.
Going back to voting, I mean, with our youth, Jenny, do you feel like high school has prepared you to become an intelligent voter?
Well, that's hard. I feel that they've educated us in a way that, you know, we're prepared to go out into the world. But as far as voting, I think that needs to come, like, within us, and we need to feel, you know, what's important to us and who, you know, what stand we have and, you know, like, where we stand. And that ultimately needs to come from each individual. And I don't think that anybody should influence us in the way we're thinking, because that's really what we need to do for ourselves.
I think what's been hardest for me growing up is, like, you know, the media really runs our political spectrum. You know, they choose who they want to interview. They choose who runs for president, practically, because they cannot give anyone attention. They cannot invite them to, you know, that people cannot be invited to debates. I mean, you can pretty much choose. They choose who runs for president. And so then the media gets involved, and I don't think you ever really hear the full side of the story. Like, I met a man who is an advisor for one of the, for someone down in San Jose who's a supervisor there, and he said, oh yeah, you know, every now and then I go and I hang out in the press office, because that way if you make friends with the guys, you know, then I can influence how they report on my, my supervisor. And he was telling us about it. He took us in. He was sitting there, you know, hanging out with the people in the press office. And he said, yeah, I've made really good friends with them. And in the year and a half, I want to say, don't quote me on that, but in the year and a half that he's been in office, there's only been one slightly bad story, you know, against his name. And it wasn't even that bad, you know. And I was like, wow. So pretty much you just told me government is completely corrupt, and as long as you make friends with the press box, everything will be okay. Yeah. Caller, you're on the air.
Hi. Excuse me. Thank you for the good program. All of them are good. My big gripe is the way the voters' pamphlets are written. They're written to be purposely confusing. And I think that those who write the things and their superiors are be jailed.
I agree.
Yeah.
Okay. I'll let you go on. Thank you.
Oh, well, thank you.
That's a really good point, yeah. Though. I mean, reading the ballots, it's like earlier we were reading Proposition 92, and it says community colleges funding, governance fees, initiative, constitutional amendment, and statute. After that, you just don't even want to read it, but establishes independent community college districts and board of governors, requires minimum funding for schools and community colleges to be calculated separately, sets fees at $15 per unit, and limits for future increases. Fiscal impact. Increases state spending on K-14 education from 07 to 08 through 09 to 010, averaging about $300 million annually with unknown impacts annually thereafter. potential loss in community college student fee revenues of about $70 million annually. And, like, we were talking about it earlier, and I said, so is it costing our state $300 million annually, or is it costing it $370 million annually? You know, you have tons of questions. Or then you listen to, or you watch TV, and they say, you know, like, I've heard a lot on Proposition 93, oh, it extends legislators' terms, and da-da-da-da-da, and this, that, and the other thing, and it's a great thing. And then, you know, some people oppose that, or like on the Indian gaming agreements, they say, oh, you know, it gives cuts of the money to all tribes with casinos, and other ads say, oh no, it, you know, it deprives the other casinos of money. And so once you hear both are saying both sides, and you're like, okay, so pretty much somebody has to be lying. And how do I know? How do you really know who is lying? Once again, the phone number is 456-9991. I mean, how do you feel about, like, especially TV ads?
Yeah, the media, like, filters whatever they want to filter and, you know, puts in whatever they want to put in to the point where, you know, everything's just so confusing that we just don't know what's going on and, you know, we don't know who to believe, like you said, Brianna.
I mean, there's really no neutral source that will explain, you know, like, even in the primary election, like, the pamphlet that you can get and look through at the things, and it'll give you an overview, but, I mean, even the overview is confusing, and you have to be careful about any source you look at on the internet, or even any newspaper you look at, because you don't know where their biases are.
Yeah. And, you know, on to another, you know, like, another point of view, you know, the Constitution, the American Constitution, is very confusing and it's open for interpretation. And, you know, that's why it's lasted probably so long, is because nobody really understands, you know, what they're trying to say. And so, you know, it's open for interpretation and, you know, nobody knows what's going on.
Caller, you're on the air.
Great. Hey, I'm wondering, regarding this 92, is the $15 limit, is that a permanent limit? Is it based on inflation or, you know, the value of the dollar, or is it just $15 to where in 10 or 15 years that might be what $2 or $3 is today?
I don't know. You know, that's the point, is that these ballots are, you know, are confusing.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it says it sets fees at $15 per unit, and it, but, you know, for how long? Is that a permanent setting, or is that going to change?
It says limits future increases, but, and my concern is that as dollars lose value, it condemns the state to a impossible to fund situation. If dollars lose their value, but it's only $15 per student, becomes quite unrelated to, you know, reality.
Exactly. I mean, I don't think it's any new news that our state is in a budget crisis, and it says, oh, it doesn't raise, you know, taxes, but where are we getting that $300 million annually from?
Well, the bankers will loan it to us at a good interest rate. Okay, I got to go. Thanks.
Okay, thank you. So, why shouldn't schools be free?
Well, I mean, mainly they're not free because we have to pay for them. Somehow we have to pay, you know, pay the instructors and pay for the lawn upkeep. I mean, I just got back from orientation yesterday from Mendocino College, and my friend and I were commenting. We're like, man, it's amazing. They must spend a lot of money on this grass here because it's perfectly green all year round. And the grass in my house gets yellow in the winter. And I'm thinking, how much money are they spending to keep this grass green all year round? And so, you know, we have to fund the green grass and we have to fund the instructors. And, you know, it costs money, but, I mean, if you look at countries like Denmark pays for everyone's education, and their taxes are very high, but, you know, a recent study just showed that, I mean, in their opinion, Denmark is the happiest place on earth right now. But part of the reason that that doesn't work for America is that they said also that Denmark, people are happier about giving their tax dollars to people that look like them and share the same views as them. And in Denmark, it's like, I think 80+% of their country are Lutherans, and, you know, they're mainly white, and so people are more into, like, giving their tax dollars because people look like them, and people share the same views as them, so it's okay to give them their money.
So, what are your base, of the votes on morals?
I mean, like, the basis of, like, if I should vote on, like, if it's moral or immoral. I mean, I really believe in Greek-based ethics, where morals are very important to me when I choose who to vote for. Yeah. Caller, you're on the air.
Hey, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Excellent discussion.
Thank you.
You are the youth, and you are the coming power brokers in our culture. And I want to suggest to you, we need a major, major overhaul of our entire electoral system. Right now, it can best be described as the best democracy money can buy. We need to start with publicly financed campaigns so that everybody gets an equal share of funds. We need to, excuse me, a little out of breath there. We need to reform the advertising aspects of elections. Television stations and radio stations use elections as a license to print money. Did you know that 90% of the money that candidates raise goes for television advertising? And these TV stations, they're operating licensed by the FCC, and they are using the people's airwaves to make their profits. So they should be required to give free and equal advertising to as many candidates as are running for certain offices. And we also need to shorten the election season down to, say, 6 months or something like that. All of these things that I've just mentioned are in effect in other countries around the world. And sure, there's a little bit of corruption everywhere, but not to the extent that it is in this country. It's just absolutely corrupt. And you guys need to work hard to put pressure on everybody you vote for and work for to change the electoral system so that we can have a more representative democracy. Thanks very much.
Thank you, caller.
Caller, you're on the air.
Oh, hi. I think you forgot one thing, which is instant runoff voting or multiple choice voting. I think schools would be a perfect place to do a study and see, you know, if you could list the candidates by number and in all parties and then see who gets the most vote. See if it made a difference between just ending up with two candidates to vote for, like we have. I think instant runoff voting would make a really big difference in who won the election.
Could you explain that more?
Well, I don't really know exactly how it works, but right now when we go to the polls, we have one choice. And if our candidate is knocked off, that's it. But if we could pick, like, we want so-and-so for number one, so-and-so for number two, that would mean that if our number one choice didn't get enough votes, then our number two choice would be counted. And it would go on down the line until, finally, one of our candidates would get our vote.
Wow, that's really interesting.
Yeah, anyhow, I think it would be interesting to have a trial in schools and see if that made any difference in who actually won the election.
Do you feel like you really understand the candidates and their views when election day comes?
No, I don't really. I just hope for the best. Anyhow, well, thank you so much. Y'all do a great job.
Thank you, caller.
Bye.
I mean, I think that's a good point of what I've been thinking about today, and that's why I asked her, is because I always feel like I don't really know the candidates, and everyone's just kind of hoping for the best and choosing the best of a lot of undesirable options.
Yeah.
I think she makes a good point about you know, not doing the runoff, not having primaries. And part of the reason I really dislike primaries is because it's created this two-party system where really nothing gets done. And, like, I mean, if you look at a lot of European countries, the way that their democracies work is when you cast your ballots or your votes, if, you know, say 46% vote Republican, 46, and this is more, you know, like in Congress, like 46 or in the Electoral College, 46% is, you know, is that party. But then if 6% vote with the Green Party or the Independent Party, you know, those seats are filled with those people. And in our system, it's kind of, you know, a winner take all. And so not all the parties are being represented. And so we're like allowing this social standard of just basicness and not making people strive for more. Yeah. Caller, you're on the air.
Yeah, good. I was listening a while back. I was a conscientious objector and a pacifist. Let me tell you about John McCain, war hero. John McCain was shot out of the sky by a rocket. He was dropping Agent Orange and bombs. He killed people. Thousands of people. And to make a hero of somebody like that and to even consider a warmonger and a professional soldier of three generations to be president of this country at this time is a joke. It's a joke. And he's going to lose to Hillary. Hillary's going to be our next president. Thank God. Hallelujah.
Thank you, caller.
Thank you.
Oh, one other thing.
Yes?
I think everybody should be allowed to vote. Little people, big people, anybody who wants to vote. I really mean that, but can't be compulsory. It's got to be entirely voluntary because half the people vote. Those are the people who have an interest in voting. The other people don't care, and we don't want them to vote. That's
right.
My opinion.
Yeah. Thank you, Colin.
Thank you for your wonderful show. I heard about 10 minutes of it at the beginning. So thank you.
Thank you. Okay. You know, I do agree that if we don't want, you know, I don't really want people voting that don't want to. But I think, you know, what's hard for me is that, you know, we don't know the candidates when election day comes. There's no way to learn about it. The media has corrupted practically every, you know, I looked at my tapes and I think this is like my eighth show now. And in every single show, it has at least come up, even if not on the air, but a previous discussion about how the media has corrupted this form of society. The media was seen as corrupt when we talked about Fast Food Nation. And, you know, the media came up as the bad guys when we talked about consumerism. And I'm like, wow, it seems like there's one common strand running through all of these problems. And it starts with the media.
Yeah.
Caller, you're on the air.
Yeah. You know what happens in Brazil with the voting? They get like 20 candidates who want to run for president. And you have to have 51% of the vote to win. So out of 20, they have a vote, and maybe the two highest ones have a second vote with the two highest ones from the first vote, and then whoever wins that becomes the president. It's in this system, it's very difficult because if you're signed up for Green Party, like in these votes next week, if you're signed up for the Green Party, you can only vote for Green Party. Mm-hmm. You can't vote mm-hmm. for a Republican person. If I'm not mistaken.
Yes.
So it's really screwy. It's you can never vote for who you want to vote for. Not
right.
That I'd vote Republican, but anyways, Brazil's got a pretty happening system.
Thank you, caller. Caller, you're on the air?
Yeah, if you really want to find out how your different people are, how they vote, especially when it comes to people in Congress, you need to go and check the congressional record. You can Google that up on the internet. Also, the U.S. government puts out a publication called The Gazette that gives a rundown on all the different bills, et cetera, et cetera. And if you go to the front section of any of your major papers on Tuesdays and Wednesdays and you look in the middle, that will give you a rundown on everything that the courts have done and decided, particularly the Supreme Court. What amazes me is that all this stuff is stuff I learned when I was in the eighth grade. And I think part of the problem is they don't teach enough civics and ethics and logic like they used to in school, which is something that that's something that you guys can work on. But, yeah, that's real quick. You check the congressional record, you look at the Gazette, and on Tuesdays and Wednesdays in the front section, go to the middle, and you'll see what the Supreme Court decided. And that'll pretty well let you know what the government's doing.
Thank you, caller.
You have a good one. Bye-bye.
You too.
Caller, you're on the air.
Hi, thank you. Your show is wonderful.
Thank you.
And I agree with the previous caller, and I agree with Martha on her instant voting runoff. I do think America should at least give it a chance. And I totally agree with you about the media, because everything begins, if it were like a center core with a series of radiant lines going off from it. It would be the media to the corporations. They're owned by three people. Our Constitution, Supreme Court speakingly, in the last 2 weeks, has sustained, we have some traitors that we elected in our government who don't seem to have any problem with it because the people don't stand up and they know that we don't want to bleed and die. They know how far they can shove us, and we're compliant with the needs of these corporations to kill our planet and the futures of our children and our health for these certain products. If we followed the money, we would understand that, of course, all of our candidates are bought in advance. It's a stacked deck at this point. If we want our freedom back now the way we thought it was, we're going to have to fight for it. And if you don't care enough to not fight, don't whine, because it's not about our government did this to us. We allowed it as people. And I agree that there are adults I talk to who have no understanding of our civic process, how to maneuver, or what that the government is, in fact, without three arms now, as of George Bush, has taken command of the Supreme Court in front of all of us. And the Supreme Court has capitulated with, go ahead and kill the whales with your naval experiments. This is about national security. The only security we need is from the people in the Black House. And I thank you for your time and your wonderful show, and you kids, get out there and go, because we have a $50 trillion debt, and I can't imagine how many thousands of years if their shell game was real. So, thank you.
Thank you, caller.
Thank you. So, that's all for this month's edition of Youth Speaks Out. Your hosts today have been Jenny,
Brianna.
Thanks to our callers. One of the purposes of the show is to involve the community in dialogue, so your call-ins are important to us. We're happy to have been available to from the Willett Studio. Youth Speaks Out is grateful for support from HALT, Healthy Activities for Laytonville Teens. HALT is a project designed by Laytonville's Healthy Start program. The program is creating many alternative activities for teens in our community. For more information, please contact Healthy Start at 984-8089 or visit their website at www.laytonville.org/healthystart.html. Youth Speaks Out is produced and directed by Dan Roberts, who may be reached by mail at P.O. Box 1162, Willits, California, 95449, or through the website www.youthspeaksout.net. There you can find out more information about the project, get addresses for contacting us, get a copy of the show, and listen to many hours of previous programs in streaming audio. That's www.youthspeaksout.net. The views expressed on this program are not necessarily those of KZYX. They are the views of those who express them. Our next show will be the last Sunday of February, the 24th, at 2 o'clock p.m. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next month.